This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Is strong economic growth in China a blessing or a curse?
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. There's news today that the Chinese economy is growing faster than expected. GDP there is now running at an annualized rate of 7.8%, fueled in part by easy credit. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz joins us from Shanghai. Morning, Rob.
Good morning, David.
So positive numbers out of Beijing today. What is pushing this kind of growth?
Well, there's a few things. There is a lot of credit made available early in the year from the central bank, but we're also seeing a reaction to a bunch of government stimulus efforts and increased demand from the U.S. and elsewhere, and that's showing the global economy has strengthened a little.
Chinese leaders are on the verge of holding a big meeting to rethink the Chinese economy yet again.
They are. In President Xi Jinping and his new government, they want to take an economy that's dependent on building big projects for growth and change that to one that's based on people buying things for economic growth. I spoke to Beijing economist Arthur Krober about this today, and he told me by the end of next year, it's likely that China's economy will be growing at less than 7%, which is a pretty big dip for China. And here's why he thinks it'll dip to that new low.
Because if you want to do these structural reforms, you will need to have credit growth slow much more because, you know, if there's easy money around and anyone can get a loan to do anything they want, then there's no pressure in the system for structural reform.
So, Rob, how will we know if Chinese authorities are serious about the big reforms then?
I asked Krober about this, and he told me that we'll know if reform is not happening if at this time next year China's economy is still chugging along at 7 or 8%, because that'll be a sign that the government's continuing to prop up GDP growth with a lot of wasteful investment, which has been the biggest problem with China's economy in the first place.
Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, David.
Let's check some stock indices now. Hong Kong's Hang Seng rose 1.1%. The FT100 in London is up 0.3% now. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed at the moment. With the debt ceiling raised for a while and the government reopened, President Obama is calling for lawmakers to essentially buckle down and get to work on such sweeping matters as the $500 billion farm bill and the overhaul of the immigration system. On that last one, there's renewed attention to a little-known directive from Congress known as the BED mandate. As the Washington Post highlighted the other day, it's a kind of quota. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has to keep an average of 34,000 people detained each day. This has key support from members of Congress who want to draw a hard line against the kind of immigration that can compete for American jobs and raise costs of social services. And this BED mandate has fueled a powerful industry, something Enrique Acevedo, journalist and anchor at Univision News, has been following. Morning, Enrique.
Good morning, David.
So a private sector industry that's grown up around the detention of migrants?
Well, yes, we're talking about over 200 facilities around the country. That's more than 150,000 bed spaces. The bed mandate argues that at least 34,000 of those beds should be filled every day. And we're talking about a federal spending on immigration detention that reaches $2.8 billion every year. That's been doubling since 2006 at a time in which budget issues have become a frequent discussion in Washington.
This mandate, this quota, some will see it as a quota, is not prorated by amount of illegal immigration. It's 34,000, but as migration across the border without documents drops, it makes it tougher for customs to find people to put essentially in these beds.
Exactly. And that's why the agency in charge of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, has been meeting this Congress directive with an expanding operation in USA. More raids, more legal U.S. residents being convicted of crimes that render them eligible for deportation, and more families separated, which President Obama said it wouldn't happen at the beginning of his administration. He's been deporting around 400,000 undocumented immigrants in average every year since he took office.
Now, I was reading that during the debate over sequestration, the Department of Homeland Security came to the table suggesting that it could save some money by lowering the bed mandate, the quota, by maybe 8% or something, make some other changes, and the taxpayer could save. But that idea ran into opposition in the House of Representatives.
You know, there are more lower-cost alternatives to detention and running these detention centers. But I think, most importantly, you can not only save money by lowering the mandate. You can save money by solving the lives of 11 million people who can just be part of the formal economy and contribute through taxes, which most of them already do. You can actually make money by fixing the broken immigration system.
Univision's Enrique Acevedo, thank you very much for this.
Thank you, David.
And wait for this number. The musical The Lion King will break a Broadway record this week. It'll be the first show to gross more than $1 billion. Marketplace's Queena Kim tells us what's behind that show's success.
The Lion King opened on Broadway 16 years ago, but it's not crossing the billion-dollar threshold because it's been around for so long. There are four other musicals that have run longer. David Rooney is a theater critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And I asked him, so how did The Lion King do it?
The how is simple. It's a good show.
Rooney says unlike previous Disney efforts, the entertainment company didn't just recreate the movie on the stage. Instead, they hired avant-garde director Julie Taymor, who used puppetry and other stage devices to capture the magic of theater. Annie says Disney's kept the marketing dollars flowing.
A lot of shows that are doing that kind of business would think, well, we don't need to spend major marketing money.
Blake Ross is the editor-in-chief of Playbill. She says the musical also has a built-in audience. When friends with children come into the city,
Lion King is a pretty great universal show for kids to go to.
And she says, like a lot of recent animated movies by Disney, adults enjoy the musical too. In San Francisco, I'm Queena Kim for Marketplace.
And we have just sentenced you to hearing Hakuna Matata in your head for the rest of the day. Sorry. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.